with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The day after. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head On Radio Network.com. See how I got the name out there early on? I didn't forget this time. Head On Radio Network.com, an internet based conversation radio experiment into its eighth year now. Available most easily at Head On Radio Network.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. The Horn is entirely a listener-supported proposition. In other words, it does not happen without you. Might as well say it at the beginning of the program here to give us extra time to try to pull it off. We look for about $150 a night in terms of fundraising just to keep this all going. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? But $150 a night, and the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And the snail mail address may also be found there under the tab Contribute. I'll go ahead and repeat it now. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for Personal Mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. And that's how that's the address you use if you want to contribute via snail mail. A request, please, though. If you do so, don't make checks payable to Bob Kincaid, or money orders, either, for that matter. Make anything you send that way, make payable to The Horn or Head On Communications, something like that, because that's where the money goes. Okay? So, I don't know about you, but I'm a little tired. Maybe if you're 3 hours behind out on the West Coast, you're not so tired. But I got everything all wrapped up pretty much about, 3 o'clock this morning. And the fact of the matter is, when you get done with something like that, you don't just go and crawl into the bed and fall asleep. You got to wind down a little bit one way or the other. So there was some winding. Not like that. There was some winding down, and I guess I got to sleep about 4:30 or 5. Because it was hard not to just... Like I said in a tweet earlier today, I probably spent more time watching Fox in the last 24 hours than I have in the entirety of my life. Because how could you not? Megyn Kelly doing her Eva Braun impression? The Karl Rove meltdown? Where was Shepard Smith in all of this? It was fun. And then, as I got posted to me in a tweet earlier today, sure hope the folks at Media Matters passed out an extra ration of tequila to the people who have to monitor right-wing radio. Yeah. And and the gas bags and idiots and ex-junkies and former drunks that make up right-wing, the top tier of right-wing radio, did not, well, they did not fail to deliver. No, really, they did not. Ordinarily, we would call this prayer meeting Wednesday, and there are some of those kinds of stories out there. But insofar as this is the day after an election, I think it is more appropriate that we focus on not so much what happened, but what happens now. Chinless Addison, so-called Mitch McConnell, has already delivered his Jeremiad. And if ever a man was entitled to have the majority of the Senate decide to change the filibuster rules so we can get some work done, Chinless Addison McConnell is the guy. John Boehner offered some sort of conciliatory BS earlier today that roughly amounted to proposing that that the debt crisis be dealt with by adopting the plans of America's Undertaker, who lost last night. Yeah, that's inspiring. Alan West is gone. So where once he told Debbie Wasserman Schultz to take her political philosophy and move somewhere, but to get out of here, get the hell out of here. No, Alan, you get the hell out of here. Take your Grace Jones haircut and see if you can get cast in a Conan movie. I don't know. We still have Steve King, and we still have Michelle Bachmann. And while part of me really wanted the weirdos who returned those people to office to finally get their comeuppance, I have been convinced that it is to our benefit to continue having those freaks as the face of the modern 21st century, second decade thereof, Republican Party. A Republican Party which, by the way, if you were looking at the numbers, is now comprised almost entirely of really cranky old white guys screaming at clouds and yelling, get off my lawn. Which is not, of course, to be confused with anyone who has Granted, he's old enough to be a member of that generation that supports the Republican Party, but I don't think anyone would ever mistake either Mick or Keith for being of the McCain bunch. Has anybody ever done a parody song of "Hey, you, get off of my lawn"? If not, why not? Just asking. No, it's been fascinating to watch the response. You know, late last night in our great big hullabaloo special election coverage special that began at midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific, we had Agnes in here as the special Donald Trump tweet reader.
Oh, God.
Did somebody finally shoot him in the neck with a Thorazine dart? Because last night he was calling for violent revolution. Really. We don't know what that thing on his head was calling for. Its mouth has not yet been discovered. But I ask if somebody caught him in the neck with a Thorazine dart simply because a little bit later, well, all his tweets disappeared. Goodbye now. Good question, Marty. And the premiere date for the Alan West show on Radio Rwanda will be when? Probably January. Jim said he watched Fox 2. They were crawling up one another's asses. Hilarious, says Jim. Kevin says, hell yes, I'm happy. The Republicans are strangely silent today, especially Karl Rove, who last night was speechless as it was announced that, yes, Barack Hussein Obama had once again been elected president of the United States. His only words were, no, on Ohio, it's not over yet. Well, there's still a nice white suburb in Delaware County that hasn't been counted. Nate Silver now should probably take ownership of all of those pundits who are out there gay-baiting him and otherwise sleazing him. He went 51 for 51. That's pretty good, even in baseball terms. Kevin asking, so for today at least, hell yes, I'm happy. How does it feel, you Republican teabagger freaks, to lose an election that you fully expected to win? Cue the Vincent Price laughter. I don't know how did you. Yeah. Signed, Kevin. Ray noting, Trump is a no one now. Adios. Marty's taking mid-February for the premiere of the Alan West show on Radio Rwanda. Marty also has another wager, a new pool for anyone who wants to get into it. Might be a little chilly around here. The impeachment pool. Bob, two questions, two parts, says Marty. One, what day the articles of impeachment are drawn up, and two, the charges themselves. Let's see here. I'll take April 4th, and the charges will be immaterial. It could be that two birds flew off a wire before the other four did, but it'll be related to Benghazi. And it will also include, I don't know, maybe some sort of sleazy charges against, Susan Rice. Ray noting, you know, it's the end of the Cheney Rove era old guard. It's time to evolve or die. Well, they don't believe in evolution, Ray. So that leaves him only one alternative. But there are questions going forward for what does, you know, what does this all mean? Now, immediately, people like Stuart Varney over at Fox Business News jumped in to say that today's 300-point plunge on the Dow Jones Industrial Index was the world responding to the re-election of Barack Hussein Obama and his collectivist socialist ideology. Stuart talks like that, you know. Never mind the fact that there was some rather disturbing news that ugly things were, well, not ugly, but well, less than happy news coming out of Germany, that the German economy is slowing a bit, which in turn speaks to the German nation's ability to continue to prop up the euro. No, we won't talk about that. That's just, no, no. Speaking of Germany, though, Patrick, in Germany, sent along an op-ed piece from Der Spiegel. And it was written before the election. It's titled, America Has Already Lost Tuesday's Election. Jakob Augstein is the author. It says, Germans see the U.S. election as a battle between the good Obama and the evil Romney, but this is a mistake. Regardless of who wins the election on Tuesday, total capitalism is America's true ruler, and it has the power to destroy the country. Herr Augstein writes, the United States Army is developing a weapon that can reach and destroy any location on Earth within an hour. At the same time, power lines held up by wooden poles dangle over the streets of Brooklyn, Queens, and New Jersey. Hurricane Sandy ripped them apart there and in communities across the East Coast last week, and many places remain without electricity. That's America, where high-tech options are available only to the elite, and the rest live under conditions comparable to those of a developing nation. No country has produced more Nobel Prize winners, yet New York City hospitals had to be evacuated during the storm because their emergency generators didn't work properly. Anyone who sees this as a contradiction has failed to grasp the fact that America is a country of total capitalism. Its functionaries have no need of public hospitals or of a reliable power supply to private homes. The elite have their own infrastructure. Total capitalism, however, has left American society in ruins and crippled the government. America's fate is not just an accident produced by the system, it is a consequence of that system. Will somebody please give this guy a job at the New York Times? I wanted to save this until after the election because I wanted people to, on the odd chance that we won last night, I wanted people to at least enjoy it. But now it's time to sober up. Obama couldn't change this, and Romney wouldn't be able to either. Europe is mistaken if it views the election as a choice between the forces of good and evil, and it certainly doesn't amount to a potential change in political direction as some newspapers on the continent would have us believe. Romney, the exceedingly wealthy businessman, and Obama, the cultivated civil rights lawyer, are two faces of a political system that no longer has much to do with democracy as we understand it. Democracy is about choice, but Americans don't really have much of a choice. Obama proved this nearly 4 years ago. It seemed like a new beginning for America when he took office, but this was a misunderstanding. Obama didn't close the Guantanamo Bay detention. See, I read, and this, I've got some issues with this. He signed the executive order. The Congress stopped it. He evinced a willingness to sign the Employee Free Choice Act, which, as Rick Smith noted last night in the extended coverage, would have been far better for female workers and male workers, but in terms of female workers, better than the Lilly Ledbetter Act. But the Senate stopped it. And not just Republicans. It was stopped by Ben Nelson of Nebraska. It was stopped by Bill Nelson, reelected in Florida. It was stopped by Mary Landrieu. It was stopped by Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas. Technically, Democrats all. But Herr Augstein has a lot of valid criticism. Not even credit default swaps, the kind of investment that brought down Lehman Brothers and took Western economies to the brink, has been banned or even better regulated. It is likely the case that Obama wanted to do more but couldn't, but what role does that play in the bigger picture? We want to believe that Obama failed because of the conservatives inside his own country. Indeed, the fanatics that Mitt Romney depends on have jettisoned everything that distinguishes the West. Science and logic, reason and moderation, even simple decency. They hate homosexuals, the weak, and the state. They oppress women and persecute immigrants. Their moralizing about abortion doesn't even spare the victims of rape. They are the Taliban of the West. This is being written in one of the most read publications in Germany. Still, they are only the symptom of America's failure, not the cause. In reality, neither the idealists and Democrats nor the useful idiots of the Tea Party have any power over the circumstances. Maybe that's one of the things that makes the Tea Party so, if it were not so comical, so pathetic. They think they do have power over the circumstances. Herr Augstein continues, from a European perspective, it doesn't matter who wins this election. Only U.S. foreign policy is important to us. And Obama is no dove and Romney no hawk. The incumbent president prefers to wage his wars with drones instead of troops, though the victims probably don't care if they're killed by man or machine. Meanwhile, despite all the criticism, hey, with a drone you get both, because there's some pimply-faced pilot with a joystick in his hand. Right. And the machine. Meanwhile, despite all the criticism, his challenger says he wouldn't join Israel were the country to go to war with Iran because the U.S. can now no longer afford such a thing. I don't know if that was really wrong. Nobody really knows what Romney's position was on anything. That's why he's going to be so easy to forget. What the hell are we supposed to remember? In any case, it is wrong to characterize Republicans as the party of warmongers and Democrats as the party of peace, or even to call the latter a left-wing party at all. After all, it was Democratic President Harry S. Truman, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson who started the wars in Korea and Vietnam. Not entirely true. Republican presidents Dwight D. Eisenhower and Richard Nixon ended these wars. Sort of. And Ronald Reagan, who Europeans see as the embodiment of both the evil and the absurd aspects of American politics, was a peaceful man compared to the standards we have since become accustomed to. He only ever invaded Grenada. The truth is that we simply no longer understand America. I ran across a phrase I thought I could actually understand. Yeah, wir verstehen Amerika nicht? I don't know. Looking at the country from Germany and Europe, we see a foreign culture. The political system is in the hands of big business and its lobbyists. The checks and balances have failed, and a perverse mix of irresponsibility, greed, and religious zealotry dominate public opinion. The downfall of the American empire has begun. It could be that the country's citizens wouldn't be able to stop it no matter how hard they tried. But they aren't even trying. And the point being that it's not going to be a political downfall. It's an economic downfall occasioned by the overarching, overweening, overreaching avarice that beats in the heart of Wall Street and in the heart of every parasitic finance wizard in this country. But there is still a lot to think about. And I don't know if it is irretrievable or not. At what point in time, when you look, for instance, at the numbers, and I realize that 100,000 votes is a lot of votes, but Mississippi went for raw money last night only by 100,000. out of 1.1 million votes cast, or a little bit more. It was roughly 600,000 to 500,000. There's a whole lot of those 600,000s who are not going to be around for a lot longer. There is an ascendancy taking place in this country with which I am entirely comfortable, and you are too, but which drives the right the white wing and the Republican Party into paroxysms of rage. This being prayer meeting Wednesday, I think we can take a look at some of that rage. Bill in Cleveland, Mr. Stress, sent something along a little bit ago. Now, all during this election cycle, Glenn Beck has trotted out his faithful bona fides, going so far as to even compare, really, Willard Romney and George Washington more than once. And he's talked about the praying that he's done, and he's just barely pulled up short of Pat Robertson in saying that God was talking to him. Right? So this being prayer meeting Wednesday, let's take a look at the response, or a listen, or a read, to the response of Glenn Beck today. Not going to play it for you. No, I'm saving that for the Limbaugh clip. Two's too many. Some of you would say that one is too many. But Bill sent this along, and it struck me as being quite the prayer meeting-ish quote, especially for a man, a faithful man of God. In this little moment, you can see the real inner workings of Glenn Beck and right-wing religious pundit types, because they have no more regard for their alleged deity than a hog does for a Sunday suit. During his radio show this morning, Beck told listeners that he had realized Romney was going to lose while praying before the polls opened on Tuesday. Listen to this. Man, sometimes God really sucks. You know how fundies get their maiden forms all in a bunch when you say goddamn? Well, you're not supposed to take the Lord's name in vain. It's a little tough to explain to them that does not constitute taking the Lord's name in vain. On the other hand, if you're making millions of dollars a year doing a radio program and you believe in God, and you get behind the microphone of said radio program and you say, "Man, sometimes God really sucks," that is lightning bolt material. Man, sometimes God really sucks. Wonder if that memo's gone out to Pastor Brother Dr. Robert Jeffress at the First Baptist Church of Dallas. I wonder if our buddies over at American Atheists have seen this. Maybe I need to send this along to Dave Silverman. Sure would make a nice billboard. Man, God really sucks. Glenn Beck. It's not American Atheists saying God really sucks. That's why that's paragon of virtue Glenn Beck, who prays all the time on his knees and stuff, and talks to David Barton of Wall Builders about how George Washington and Willard Romney are practically the same guy. Maybe it's a case of reincarnation. Who the hell knows? Man, sometimes God really sucks. I got up yesterday at 3 a.m. and I knew, and I couldn't sleep, and I started to say my prayers, and I got up and kneeled down by the edge of my bed. And how many times has he kneeled so far? And I knew that, or I suspected that my mind's not God's mind. You suspected that your mind's not God's mind? Well, you take your progress where you can get it. I suspected that my mind's not God's mind, and the peace and the comfort that he had given me and so many of my friends was not about an election. Just like, oh dear God, just like those Christians that rolled up the Dead Sea Scrolls and put them in pots. Memo! I would say with something approaching 99% certainty that it was not Christians who rolled up the scrolls and put them in pots by the Dead Sea. That's Qumran. Hard by a little community that was run by the Essenes, who were not Christians, who were pre-Jesus. We're hair splitting. How many fundamentalists can dance on the head of it? Never mind. Just like those Christians that rolled up the Dead Sea Scrolls and put them in pots. I don't know what happened to those Christians, but they hid them. They hid them and they preserved them because it was important. The Bible was never wiped out, but the people who originally wrote the Bible were scattered. The Christians who wrote the Bible. Oh, Betsy! Yeah. Too much. Going back to the Der Spiegel article, Michael writes, excuse me? Nixon committed treason. He put the kibosh on Vietnam peace talks in order to win the presidency. LBJ is on tape with Republican Senator Dirksen calling Nixon's actions treason, and Dirksen, Republican, agreed. I call bullshit on him ending the war, as do I. Irish Dave asking, mysterious, ain't it, Glam? Irish Dave also asking, and I think this is a pointed and poignant question, does the cult of Jesus Christ, LDS, Mammon, even have sackcloth and ashes? Well, if they do, Irish Dave, it's for somebody else to sit in, not them. Ain't no sackcloth and ashes over at the Beck Mansion in Connecticut. Ray pointing out, you're right, Bob. Obama is but a bus driver. His route pre-programmed. And I tend to admit, there's truth. There's truth in these things. That is why I have spent so many months talking about imperial administrators. We're not talking about people acting of free will. They are acting within a framework that is pre-established for them. How many of us understand that? I don't know. Michael had something to point out a little bit ago, though, that I thought trenchant. He said, over on Facebook, he said, FYI to any lefties out there who think I'm an Obama bot or a moron or a drooling fanboy. Voting your conscience, i.e. for a third party, also ran vanity candidate, must be a nice luxury to gloat about when you live in an uncontested state, huh? He wrote this yesterday. I voted my conscience just like I always do. Handing the world off to Bishop Willard and his merry band of rapists for the sake of a little drum circle street cred is to me beyond unconscionable. When, if Obama wins Ohio, this was last night before the victory, even though you won't thank me, you're effing welcome. Nothing personal, anyway. I'm just getting that off my chest, and I understand that. Then, later, however, a couple of other observations from Michael that I thought worth passing along. Friends, it may be that your GOP friends and colleagues will continue to be quiet and a bit embarrassed today. But when a cranky one does lash out, they'll speak incoherently. Here's an easy translation guide. If a teabagger says, "Our freedom is dead, America's dead," what they really mean is, "I just pooped myself because another small chip off my unearned and undeserved cloak of white privilege just fell away." Asterisk. Note. Just smile, nod, and move on. They don't understand what white privilege means anyway, and today is not the day to explain it to them. And finally, this. Public service announcement. Remember, every 2 years, the entire House of Representatives is up for re-election. Election 2014 is less than 2 years away. Start calling your Republican congressman now and encourage them to loudly, proudly, and publicly voice their views on God, pregnancy, and rape. Do it for America. Hear, hear. But that leads into a larger point, which is this. And no, we're not going to engage in any speculations or... But it is undeniable that we will have midterm elections in November of 2014. I went and voted my ticket yesterday, as noted, and I did what I had said all along I would do. I voted for the Mountain Party candidate for governor, and I voted for the Mountain Party candidate for Senator of the United States. Shucks, I might have voted for the Mountain Party candidate for auditor, but there wasn't one. I might have voted for the Mountain Party candidate for county surveyor, but there wasn't one. I might have voted for the Mountain Party candidate for animal control officer, but there wasn't one. I might have voted for the Mountain Party candidate for sheriff, but there wasn't one. I might have voted for the Mountain Party candidate for my congressional representative, but there wasn't one. I might have voted for the Mountain Party candidate for the Senate of the state of West Virginia, but there wasn't one. I might have voted for the Mountain Party candidate for the House of Delegates in my district, but there wasn't one. Nor, I suspect, were there many of them on any of your ballots. Some, I'm sure, Preston has told us about them in the past. But not a lot. Because somewhere out there is this notion that third-party candidacies must begin by winning the presidency. Which is nothing but utter, unmitigated bullshit. I'm glad the folks that are into third-party politics are not in charge of building buildings. And apparently never have been. Otherwise, the pyramids of Egypt would have attempted to have been precariously perched on their points with their bases up in the air. We are progressives, we are liberals, and we find ourselves quite often dismayed that there is no systemic change, only political change. Demographically, we have the great tide of the culture flowing with us and not against us. Like some ancient, ignorant, barbaric, semi-literate king, the GOP, the Repiglicans, stand at the shore and command the tide to recede. While it keeps on coming. We, however, are that tide. You got 2 years, third party folks. You got 2 years. Don't go recruit candidates to run for the goddamn Congress. Go recruit some candidates to run for county commission. You want to make real change in America, you make change on the county level for things like renewable energy and sustainability. And they'll have to deal with it higher up because you're laying the foundation stones of buildings and edifices that can stand for thousands of years. Thus far, however, you have only stood around trying to put the pointy end of the pyramid's capstone in the sand, and it keeps tipping over, and you don't understand why. Now, this does not apply only to Greens. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm frustrated as hell with the Democratic Party. The reason I voted for all those Mountain Party, well, both of them, those Mountain Party candidates yesterday, was because there was no viable Democrat to vote for. You know the story. Here in West Virginia, there are Colocrats and Colicans. Kind of left me out in the cold. Probably got a little tighter than my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, would have liked to have admitted. He only beat the wild-eyed right-winger Rick Snuffett by a couple of tens of thousands of votes. But Blanche Manchin ran away with the election. Earl Ray Tomlin pretty much ran away from Mill Baloney. But there was some down-ballot grief on our ticket here. A man for whom I have a great deal of respect, a man named Daryl McGraw, who for 20 years has protected the citizens of West Virginia from predatory practices by corporations, pharmaceutical companies, lending agencies, and whatnot. He got beat by a barrage of filthy Citizens United money that was pouring like a sewer into this state for months on end. Why didn't Attorney General Daryl McGraw stand up against Obamacare? Well, maybe because Attorney General Daryl McGraw has forgotten more law than most teabagger lawyers will ever even know, and he knew that that was a fool's errand in the first place, whether he supported it or not. And so they found this creep named Morrissey, who 6 years ago bought a house in West Virginia but has continued to live in New Jersey? Yeah, New Jersey. To run for Attorney General, they poured obscene amounts of money into his campaign, ran pure, absolutely scurrilous ads against Daryl McGraw. And Daryl McGraw's only pushback was to say, why is the man running for the chief judicial elected office, legal office in this state, why was he only admitted to practice law in the state of West Virginia 4 days before he filed for election? Because, see, this Morrissey creep is a new breed of animal. He's a tea carpet bagger. And so for all those tens of thousands of West Virginians who voted for this goon, congratulations, baby. You're on your own. And when RTO or some out-of-state lending agency screws you blue till your eyeballs bulge, Don't go crying to tea carpet bagger Morrissey, because he thinks that that's what you're there for. You are fodder. Attorney General McGraw brought lawsuits against the big pharmaceutical companies for their role in making OxyContin, what has been referred to as hillbilly heroin, so easily available in this state. The tea carpetbagger thinks that suing Big Pharma is a bad, bad idea. So, you who voted against Attorney General McGraw, when your kid gets caught with a pocket full of pills at the high school, don't expect anyone's pity. You brought it on yourselves. And I'm going to say something now that I never dreamed I would actually say. But I am going to say it. it's pretty much just time for the United Mine Workers of America to pack up, pull down the tent, turn out the lights, and close the door. You're done. What was once the single most powerful trade union in the United States is nothing more than a cartoon of racism and hate. In this election cycle, the United Mine Workers of America couldn't bring themselves to endorse Barack Obama for re-election as President of the United States. They couldn't do that because, well, the company done told us there's a war on coal. When in fact, the only war going on in this state is the war on babies in the womb being poisoned by some of those self-same United Mine Workers up on mountaintop removal sites. A war on the ability of middle-aged men to become old men. A war on the ability of little boys to look in the older eyes of a man and say, Grandpa, let's go fishing. And the United Mine Workers could not reach consensus on whether or not they wished to endorse the man who gave them their hand-picked guy at the Mine Safety and Health Administration. They couldn't come to a decision as to whether they wanted to endorse the president who had, through his policies, seen underground coal mining hires go up in Appalachia. They just couldn't do it. A United Mine Workers that was founded as an integrated union because everybody's black down in the mine could not see its way clear to endorse a president who had done work for them that he didn't even have to do. They're done. Fold it up, turn the lights off, and tell Cecil Roberts to maybe go find some honest work. Because the United Mine Workers of America have, not by anything anyone else has done, but by their own actions, rendered themselves irrelevant. And I'll say this. Even after the election today, I heard some babbling right-wing idiot talking, well, you know, you gotta stop this overreaching regulation of the war on coal! No, there hasn't been. And I don't know about you, but I am damn sure ready to see one. Here on the 7th day of November 2012, Barack Hussein Obama owes precisely nothing to the coal industry or the coal states. Not a damned thing. A quick look at the demographic map of southwestern Virginia, the southwestern Virginia coal fields where they had a coal, it was all about the war on coal. And eastern Kentucky and all of West Virginia and southern Ohio, they ain't a blue county in 'em. So, Mr. President, fuck 'em. Do what you need to do. Don't think of it as a mandate, but a reverse mandate. You owe nothing to these ignorant jackasses. Not a damned thing. But you do owe something to the future. It's time to get busy. It's time for you to understand that we can have a better future in this benighted region. But we can't have it by maintaining the status quo. It is time to get serious about coal. It is time to get serious about oil. It's damn sure time to get serious about gas. But more than all three of those put together, it is well past time to get really serious about wind and solar and geothermal. Part of that Wall Street tank job earlier today came as a result of oil stocks going down. Aw, poor babies. They probably won't be able to declare that extra billion in profits they were hoping for this quarter. Nah, they'll find a way. But really, it's okay now, Mr. President. Get out that little blank notebook you write your executive orders on. You know, the right wing must have it. Nobody's ever written more executive orders than that Kenyan Muslim in the White House with the deep hatred for white people and anti-colonialist man. Get with it. We need to see an executive order that ends mountaintop removal yesterday. You could do it, you know. Make them stop you. Mitch McConnell, one of the chief architects of both the war on you and the phony baloney war on coal. Well, he's already put one across your bow, Mr. President. He's already told you that he's going to stop, that nothing will get through the Senate, even if something sane was to miraculously happen inside the House of Representatives. Do you understand? The closing of his remarks last night, we ran them on our extended program, were brilliant and beautiful. It doesn't matter if you are black or white, Latino or Asian, or Native American, male or female, young or old, gay or straight. You can make it in America. But that will only come true, Mr. President, if you reach, unless, that will only come true if you reach out and slap these teabagging right-wing white wing pieces of shit until the spit flies out of their mouth. I've had a lot of stuff to think about. Well, you know, in between yawns, I'm kind of zonked. This can be, coming up, a new dawning. It does not, by definition, have to be gridlock. I'd say that maybe tomorrow at the latest would be a good time to pick up the phone and say, hey, Howard, it's Barack. I ain't got to run for re-election anymore. What do you say we put that 50-state strategy back in place? What do you say we start looking to put a whole bunch of Republicans out of freaking work in 2014. In that last year, if we do that, Howard, I got a feeling we can get a lot of stuff done. I bet you Howard would say happy to do it, Mr. President. I can't help thinking, even though our buddy Matt Osborne pointed out that Alabama is now a totally orphan state with not a single elected Democrat in statewide office. Yes, Roy Moore, big rock with the Ten Commandments on it, Roy Moore has been returned as the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. No, really, not kidding. I bet it was kind of a grim time down at the tactical shooting range in Hoover, Alabama, where the Alabama GOP had its victory party last night. But somebody named Twinkle is now a member of the state government. Really, the state government. There is a statewide officer in Alabama named Twinkle. Not kidding. Bless her heart, she's been running for years. But how must it feel to sit in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia? Tennessee actually returned the pro-life, hey, why don't you go get an abortion guy, Scott Desjarlais, to the Congress of the United States, to which Fritz in Arkansas now said, Arkansas gets up every morning and says, thank God for Tennessee, and how sad that is. But look at that map. Look at that map. The old Confederacy plus some. And after every... Well, all that red. And they know only one thing this morning. They are utterly, completely, totally, and without hope. Rendered. Irrelevant. They're meaningless. Irrelevant. They can talk about fetuses. They can talk about all that they want. They can talk about the homosexuals. They can talk and talk and talk and talk. Nobody's listening. Nobody's listening to you, Alabama Stan. You're irrelevant. Nobody's listening to you, old white men in Mississippi. You're irrelevant. Nobody's listening to you, Arkansas. You're irrelevant. Nobody's listening to West Virginia. We're irrelevant. But for decent people, upstanding people, people of conscience, people with compassion, there is a beauty in that irrelevance. Because it means that maybe we can finally begin to fix what rendered them irrelevant in the first place. And if 4,000 or 5,000 mountaintop removal poisoners have to sign up for some food stamps, some unemployment, I'm fine with that. Might do them some good to swallow some of that false pride that they've been gnawing on for way, way, way too long. Email coming in from Isaac. Hold on, Bob. Can you explain this? In the weeks ahead, I also look forward to sitting down with Governor Romney to talk about where we can work together to move this country forward, Obama said. And you think Obama's going to listen to what you're suggesting? I didn't say I thought that, Isaac. I said it'd be a damn good idea, though. I don't want Barack Obama. I would personally think... Nah, I hope that's just the nicey-nicey talk of being offering a classy victory speech, because God knows it served as counterpoint to the absolute lack of class. Jesus, Willard Romney couldn't even bear to say Barack Obama's name. Maybe that's because he doesn't really have one, because he's not really a real... You know, but, you know. This in from Andy. Concerning the Der Spiegel piece, so President Kennedy started Vietnam, BS. NSAM 263, 10563 authorizes that all military advisors be brought home from Vietnam. Result, kill the president, ASAP to save the empire. Yeah, well, I don't expect a German commentator to get everything right. In regards to voting for third parties, the esteemed union leader, freedom of speech advocate, and political prisoner Eugene V. Debs said, I'd rather vote for something I want and not get it than something I don't want and get it. Mr. Obama won California by 21%. Big congressional wins in California District 7. Democrat Ami Bera beats Representative Dan Lundgren. Oh, that's beautiful. Member of the Göring Waffen SS Brigade, 50.1 to 49.9. Democrat Raul Ruiz beat Representative Mary Bono Mack. Ho-ho! That's beautiful! To the tune of 51.4 to 48.6, and your ACAC supporter Democrat Jerry McNerney keeps his seat, beating Ricky Gill 54.1 to 45.9. Raul Ruiz was a big win, knocking off a long-term Republican seat. Oh, yes, it was. And Mary Bono Mack was the author of her own demise in that right, with the sleazy, tawdry things that she said about her own district. My four, says Andy, my four favorite ballot propositions among 11. Prop 37, GMO labeling, lost 47 to 53.09%. And it turns out there was a lot of dirty skullduggery involved with that. Prop 32, prohibit union dues for political campaigns, lost 43 to 56. Prop 30, tax hike on upper brackets and sales tax, passes 53 to 46. Prop 34, eliminate death penalty, lost 47 to 52. That'd be kind of interesting to plot on a Venn diagram, wouldn't it? Thank you, Andy. Oh, Marty says the Lundgren-Bera race is still going to a recount, and we still couldn't get Issa out. But you're not likely to lose, get rid of Issa. Issa, I'm sorry. He's in a place that likes to elect creepies like that. So that's the end of the filibobster for this Wednesday evening. Well, there's a lot more content out there, but listen, I far prefer conversation radio. If you want to get involved with the program, there are two ways. 304-658-3333 gets you into the studio. So, too, does a Skype call to Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you haven't friended up with me via Skype, just send me a request. I'll authorize it, and boom, there you go. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is Conversation Radio. Conversation Radio is listener-supported. It costs about $150 a night for us to keep all of this going. The end of the first hour of the program, we are at zero. We'll be back, and we'll go to the phones and your calls. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We can't play this game anymore. Now it's time.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
That's right. 9 minutes past the hour on this Wednesday, the 7th of November, 2012. I'm Bob Kincaid. Tired from the late night last night. The archive of last night's extended session will be going up and will be posted at whiterosesociety.org under the Horns page there. Yeah, I'm just a little tired. I can't even claim a respectable hangover. I can't even claim any sort of a hangover at all, dadgummit. I didn't crack into much of nothing. Too tired. Got kind of cold back here in the studio toward the end. My feet got numb, and well, you know, having cocktails in bed, sort of Mike and Carol Brady style, just it ain't that much fun. The phone number is 304-658-3333, and you can connect via Skype at Bob Kincaid Horn. Straightway to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, what's up, man?
Well, I'm a little kind of in the same boat you are. I'm a little tired. I had a lot of fun watching Fox News last night after it was called.
Really? I don't know that they'll ever admit it, Jeremy, but they probably had their largest viewership in their entire history last night.
It was probably the funniest thing I've seen in a long, long time. It was unending laughs for me, just watching them, like, just melt down in their studio right there in front of the cameras.
Oh, there was some serious melting done when they had to. I mean, somebody inside Fox actually confessed that part of the strategy that sent Megyn Kelly walking over across the hall into the so-called strategy room was to get Republicans' mind off the ass whooping they took by letting them look at Megyn Kelly's legs.
And then she almost fell down the stairs.
Yeah. Because she, overcome with grief, or the black capsule was kicking in. I don't know. I mean, she's okay, isn't she? She made it back. She made it to work today. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I saw her on this morning. She was on again, probably dosed up with some caffeine or something to keep herself in La La Land or something. And then I caught the recap this morning of Bill O'Reilly doing his spiel about what's the cause of this. And I'll give him credit on a small, minute area. He said demographics have changed. He's fucking right, they have.
Yeah. But then, you know, his follow-up was, and white people are now the minority in America.
And that,
you know, just
true.
Like they were when they first landed on this continent.
Right. And then we proceeded to become the dominant by wiping out the indigenous people.
Yeah.
With plague blankets and buckshot and you name it, just in the name of, hey, you guys don't speak English, you wear funny clothes, and
you don't believe in land ownership. You gotta go.
No, exactly. You got gold. Hey, but you know, in the end, in a small, small way, the Aztec did get won over on some of the Spanish conquistadors. And making them believe there's a place called Lorado or El Dorado.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's just over the next hill. It's more than just over the next hill. It's quite a hike. You better get going now.
And then you to that hill, come on that hill too. Don't worry, just a couple more hills over.
Yeah. Yeah, there's somebody right over there. They'll tell you how to get there the rest of the way. But really, really, you need to leave quick. It's a long march.
But I think we owe a thanks to probably the generation that comes behind me. They, I think they stood up again this time and they said, hell no, we're not going to put Romney in this place. I know a lot of people my age and older were whining and bitchy this morning about the world going to hell. And I just had one thing to say to them. I said, like you teabaggers always say, this is America. If you don't like it, get the fuck out.
Yeah. Goodbye now. Although John Fox pointed out on last night's late coverage that someone was, well, we're going to Australia now. And John said,
They have higher taxes than we have.
Well, but you can't bring your guns. And we got some of that socialized health care. And we've got an atheist female prime minister. You guys sure about that? Yeah. Well, now, the fact of the matter is, with the exception of the United States, Jeremy, these filthy white racists have run at, what we're watching is that the walls are closing in on them. They are being encircled, not by any deliberate action, I don't think, but they are being encircled as a function of their own unwillingness to evolve. Of course, they don't believe in evolution, so I guess we're not surprised.
With the exception of Iran, most of the rest of the civilized world loves our president. They have no problem with him. It's only our own white racists here in this country that really deeply dislike him, not for his policies, but for his skin color, even though they'll never admit it because it's too belittling for them to do that. They could never do it.
No, they can't. And well, don't leave. I don't know how crazy Israel is about him, because I did catch a whole lot of fulminating about, well, what about our dear friend Israel, and why won't Barack Obama bow and scrape to Benjamin Netanyahu like he's supposed to?
And I give, as much as some of the things he did in his first 4 years that a lot of us do not agree with, I give him all the credit in the world for telling Benjamin Netanyahu to take a bow and fuck, I'm not going to come talk to you. And basically told him, I don't care if I'm in the country, well, I'm not talking to you. Because he doesn't want to be put in a position where he feels he's being bullied into, we're going to attack Iran, you're going to come with us because you're our friends. So, even if he just did that, he held off what people think is inevitable at some point is going to happen. But he stood up to them and said, no, I'm not going to talk to you. Maybe another time. I'm too busy right now.
And I think he should be too busy for about 4 more years.
More than that. Hopefully, in 4 more years, we can do something more than this and hold it again.
Right. Maybe in 4 more years, we can find somebody else who's too busy.
And I was listening to Moy last night. I really hope that he's right. I hope that progressives, liberals, people are moving this country forward. Really try to push some people in the next election cycle.
Well, that's why, Jeremy, I was talking about, you know, if you don't like the politics, somebody work up some guts and go run for county commission. Everybody is not called upon to be president or a member of the Senate or House of Representatives. Granted, it comes with a nice paycheck and benefits package, but we will, if you really and honestly want change, one, if you're a third partyist, then you better get busy building your base. But two, you know what? I still say that you hear a lot of, well, the Democratic Party's been taken over by the corporations. But the reason the Democratic Party was taken over by the corporations is because a whole lot of progressives bailed out on the Democratic Party and created a vacuum that they were able to step into.
Right.
So, you know, how about we run some real live, honest to God progressive Democrats?
It'd be nice to see them do that. I would like to see that happen. And I was going to say, like you, I had the luxury of being in a state where I was fairly certain that Obama would take it, so I was able to vote third party this time too.
Well, I didn't vote third party for president. I absolutely voted for Barack Obama. and I have my own selfish reasons for doing that. I wanted to be one of the that distinct minority in this state, especially among white people, who said, "Hell yeah, I voted for him. What are you going to do about it?" If I could find the Obama sign that was there, if I could borrow another one, the one, you know, my first Obama sign was stolen out of the yard within a week of going up. I would get another one and paint "suck it" white wingers on the bottom of it and stick it in the ground and see if it lasted another 24 hours. I mean, I really can't imagine this state. How stupid are we? And of course, I say we. You're not a West Virginian, Jeremy. But how stupid is West Virginia? We rely in terms of disability and Social Security and Medicare on monies that come for roads and bridges, and this state has to have the patronage of the federal government, and we ran to the polls yesterday and stuck our finger in the president's eye. But then again, the same can be said for Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee.
Right.
Yeah. South Carolina.
I don't know, but I know that yesterday, well, at work, I have nothing to listen to except for CNN, and I was quite disgusted myself with all the goddamn clean coal commercials I heard. I must have heard two every commercial break about how we need to get off this, there's no such thing as clean. They went just so close to stopping to say there's no such thing as people saying there isn't such thing as clean coal. Just that close. But there had to have been two to three commercials a break. I'm not even kidding.
Oh no, I saw some of it, and that's what occasioned me to wonder why it is that Van Jones is willing to have anything to do with them. Couldn't he get a job with MSNBC? I mean, I would think MSNBC would have embraced him.
I thought he did have a job with MSNBC, and I thought he was gone about the same time Oberman left. Maybe I don't
remember that. But I'm sure if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me.
I'm pretty sure he had a show that was right around that same time, because he'd have Van Jones all the time until they parted ways. No, wait, I'm sorry. He was on Current TV, because that's where Oberman was after MSNBC, and that's where I was seeing the two of them together.
Okay.
So he did have a show on Current, but I don't know if it fell through or what happened. You were there, too.
Well, I tell you what, there's a laundry list of lunacy out there. They're not taking this at all well. I mean, I don't know where Meatloaf was last night, but he was probably making more funny animal noises like he made on stage in Ohio.
Well, I know today that just for the sheer sake of it, I tuned in to Glenn Beck for about 5 minutes. And basically, from the gist of it, all I get is he knew this was going to happen. He prayed to God. God has seen them through. They're on the other side of this already. They just need to move beyond it. They're already beyond the suffering we're going to go through, and whatever. More of his gobbledygook crazy talk. But it was just funny to hear, because you can hear his lunacy getting deeper and deeper.
No, and that's the thing. There's a double down impulse out there, Jeremy, that is quite stunning to behold. I've already seen it at work.
Right.
I was already seeing it in play. This, as predicted, the this was not a failure of conservatism. Okay. And I've seen things like, hell no, we're not going to back off on abortion. Well, good. That's great. I'm glad of that. Because that means you're just going to shrivel up and die and dry away. Goodbye now.
And I experienced that myself. I had a friend who, last night I had made some post on social media basically saying, well, nothing's changed in the House of Tyler presidency, same for the next 4 years. And to that, I told him, no, several things have changed. And I brought up the two senators who drummed out for their rape comments. I brought up the first openly gay senator. And his response was, well, you think on those things based on the way you were raised and things you've been through in your life. So basically he wouldn't support the fact that the two guys that were saying rape's a gift from God were drummed out of Senate for it.
Right, and I think our buddy Michael is correct. We need, you know, we need to make sure that they don't back down on that. We need to know, we need to hear all about, we need to keep hearing all about rape. And the other guy that needs to go away now is Rush Limbaugh.
He needs to go away, but the same friend of mine, his one weakness is he really, really, really liked Alan Grayson. Really liked him. So I had to point that out, so he didn't like that too much either. Like I said, couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Ain't that the truth.
But with that, I'll let you go on other people. There's other people out there.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeremy. Good to hear from you this evening, my friend.
You too. Thank you.
Stay warm.
Yep, I will. It's 36 here.
Yeah, and dropping. I guess there's more nasty on the way. I don't know if it can catch you, clip over the mountains and catch you, but so far it's just cold and nasty here.
I think Thursday is supposed to be snowstorms here. We're supposed to get a nor'easter.
Oh, brother. Like anybody up that way needs it. Well, strap in and hang in. Hang on.
Okay, have a good night.
Later, Jeremy. Bye.
Bye.
Jeremy calling from Vermont. About 24 minutes past the hour. We'll keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Rape? Rape? I like rape. We don't need no stinking badges.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Jim, what's going on?
You.
Well, speaking of which, I wanted to share something that Texas Betsy sent along. Some wise character out there put in Republican Party to an anagram generator.
Oh, God.
You want to hear some of the things that come out of it?
Enthrall me with your acumen.
Well, it ain't mine. It is somebody over to Jezebel. Jezebel.com.
Well, that's a good name.
I think so. Let's see. You can anagram Republican Party to Raping Up by Rectal.
Ooh.
You can anagram Republican Party to Rape Can Blur Pity, or Rape Party in Club, Rape Cry Bail Punt, or then this absolute perfect description of the Republican Party, Pricey Nut Rape Lab.
Well, they love rape. I mean, there are many kinds of rape. I mean, you know, besides physical. Financial,
yeah.
Spiritual,
social.
Yeah, I mean, we can go through the whole list, you know, through the entire alphabet of the types of rape for which they stand. You know, that's the way it is. I just want to let you know. I don't know if you got my email. I called old Stupid this morning to see how he was feeling.
Oh, and the out the.
I just told him, I just made up this the accent of mine saying that I made him slap and tickle. And did he know where I could find some shine?
Nice.
Oh, it wasn't too nice for the subsequent callers because they weren't in any type of mood for any humor, that's for sure. But anyway. Last night's confab or Capone Con, that was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't. Has any radio program ever had 14 or 15 people on the line at one time?
Not that I know of. No, I mean, a lot of things were pretty interesting. I would like to. Or maybe would not like to hear a recording of what went on, but...
Oh, it's out there. I've uploaded it. I just have to send it along to Ben Birch after the show tonight.
I think some people got some things off their minds that they really had for a long time. That's for sure.
And that little, you know, that little confab takes place fairly regularly.
Hmm. I'll tell you, when I turned on Fox News after our confab, I don't know what the guy's name is. It's the one, I call him Mr. Brill Cream, with dark hair who sits in the center.
Oh.
He is between two of their...
There's such a creepy lot. You said Mr. Brill Cream. I started thinking about Charles Hammer of the Kraut.
I don't think, I'm not sure if it was he or not, but this guy I think was, hell, it used to be on MSNBC, and they ran his ass off. So, and, you know, everybody that gets run off of CNN or MSNBC.
Bill Hemmer?
It could have been.
Because, yeah, he's from CNN.
Well, this guy was on Fox, and he was between these two women, and they were all absolutely going ape. I mean, they just were just totally flummoxed. I mean, but, you know, they were just babbling, so it sounded like a recording from a psycho ward. It really did. I mean, each one was interrupting the other and flailing of hands and things of that nature, and God, they were just going absolutely nuts. And on this afternoon, they were talking about marijuana on Fox, and they had some woman, I don't know what her name was, but she was acting like she was nuts. She was a former prosecutor, and I mean, they were all so totally gobsmacked that none of them could make sense about anything. They were going about how in certain states medical marijuana was approved and this, that, and the other, and
well, yeah, and there were, you know, there were bellwether moments last night in Minnesota. When they, you know, it's not like they got marriage equity there, but they turned down by a pretty hefty margin a constitutional amendment that would have said marriage is between a man and one woman. Yeah. And they just said no. And Maryland approved marriage equity. Colorado and Washington. I'll be honest, Jim. I don't know how state decriminalization of marijuana. You know, this wasn't a medical marijuana bill. This was straight up decriminalization, recreational, whatever.
Well, see, I couldn't tell what they were talking about because they were.
Yeah, this isn't medical marijuana. This is decriminalization.
Well,
and
that should have been done years ago.
And it, well, yeah, it should have been. But the thing is, there's the question is how much of a to what degree, I guess, will the Obama administration go along with it and not drop, let the Federal Bureau of Investigation or the DEA go ahead and drop a rock on them? Because there is one thing to be borne in mind here, Jim, and that is this. The decriminalization of marijuana would probably occasion a significant cut in the workforce at DEA.
Well, sure. I mean, it's what keeps these guys in, you know, in their jobs. Absolutely. And, I've known that for years, having been, you know, a federal worker, and I know how people try to keep things going to keep their jobs in place. And yeah, it would definitely thin their ranks. But there's some of these things that are so much more important that they could be, you know, in pursuit of that would, I think, keep them all up to their ears than Barbara Cartland novels and me, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Good Lord, what about cocaine and all this other stuff and heroin and everything?
Right.
I mean, there's so many drugs that are so much more dangerous than you know, marijuana.
Cannabis, right.
Exactly.
And there's so many fun things you can do with it.
Oh, I know.
And all kinds of appliances.
You're telling me?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to move you over into the, you know, the aquarium pump with the stirrups and yeah. Right.
Oh God, that thing! Let me tell you something. I wish I could give Donald Trump that device and let him hook up with it.
Just for the benefit of those who have never heard the story, Jim, would you please?
Oh God, Bob. Well, okay. Here goes, Kitty. Sit around the fire. Listen to Grandpa Jim talk about his days. Devices in which cannabis use could be in use, but I had this big bong, and it had a place where you could put your feet. So hell, you needed to, because when you took a hit off that thing after the aquarium pump started going, well, I hope you had your own hair on, because if you had a wig or something on,
it was gonna get blown right off.
That's what I wish Trump would try this, some of this stuff, and I guess I would like to see if that thing on his head stays there. Because it would probably go flying right into the MetLife building on 57th Street from where he lives. I don't know where the asshole lives, but nonetheless, yeah, those were my wilder days, and And, you know, we didn't have any real problem with any of that stuff. You did if you were stupid. But, I mean, as far as my personal usage is concerned, I mean, it wasn't like I was, you know, Cheech and Chong and this, that, and the other, and everything was up in smoke because I held a responsible job and, you know, did what I was supposed to do, got up and went to work and everything. But it was relaxing. It was, you know, almost like, you know, what Alice B. Toklas and Gertrude Stein would have done in their place at in Paris in the Rue de Fleury, and you know, it was basically that type of thing. And I just, well, a friend and I got together and decided he would make a super pipe, which was guaranteed to be efficient. I mean, efficiency is very important in these types of things.
Absolutely.
And that's how the electric pump and the things was a stirrup for your feet, because I can guarantee one thing. Absolutely. I don't care how.
Well, you wouldn't want to be thrown off, Jim.
Absolutely. I mean, you can be as. I don't think many people could be that good an equestrian, but those were back in the 70s and in the early 80s and this, that, and the other. And I'd be afraid to assemble something like that now because some asshole would probably smell something and call the man on you, you know?
Yeah.
But back in those days, it wasn't quite so bad.
And, well, I have to admit, I'm retired, too, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, good Lord. It's great. I mean, youth is for living, and it's for experimentation, and it's for a lot of other things. I mean, old age and you know, those times are coming soon enough, so enjoy your
gather ye rosebuds.
Get you rose, that's why you may, because, I mean, you know, the winter's coming and they're not going to be there anymore. And as far as the use of cannabis is concerned, I mean, it's one of the oldest drugs in the pharmacopoeia.
Oh, without a doubt. I think it's been found in situations where you understand that it was not being used for hemp as far back as some, like, you know, ancient human occupations on the Russian steppes.
Oh, everywhere. I mean, you know, obviously, whether you grew cannabis for hemp or whatever, when you burn some of it and you got downwind of it, and all of a sudden you were enthralled in a torment of laughter and giggles, you knew something was there. I mean, how the hell did they discover coffee? I mean, they probably discovered coffee by I saw wild animals eating the berries off of it and getting kind of a charge. And they said, we better explore this. You know what I'm saying?
Indeed. And the same, you know, the same. A long time ago, there was a little publication out there, Jim, called A Child's Garden of Grass.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was a recording at one point, but at some point it was also reduced to print. And there was a theory in there that cannabis usage was discovered by early humans because a light and cannabis usage and human speech were invented on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when lightning struck a hemp plant, caused it to burn. Og the caveman wandered a little too close, breathed the fumes, and immediately uttered the first human words, "Oh wow, oh wow, oh wow, oh wow."
Oh, I could certainly appreciate that. Absolutely. But I enjoyed the conversations last night. I enjoyed seeing Bishop get his ass whipped.
Yeah, well, I've seen some very, very funny graphics today, among the best of which is a picture of Big Bird that simply says, "Who's unemployed now, biatch?" I laughed.
Really? I mean, you know, I think the Republican Party ought to take a lesson from this, that they can no longer reply and depend upon their power base dealing with old white men.
Well, they're running out of them, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And even they were admitting on Fox News last night, they even made, I don't know if you heard this or not, but they were questioning the legitimacy of their own power base and how they were no longer in vogue. Hey, guys. You're out of fashion. No one is wearing you this year.
And may never again.
God, I hope not. I mean, but I'm sure they'll have a couple weeks to recover, and they're going to be taking all kinds of pot shots and stuff like that and making all types of ugly noises and threats because, you know, that's their métier. Or métier or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, no, I get it completely. And that's why I was asking the question I just asked about places like Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi and South Carolina and Arkansas. How does it feel to be irrelevant? And this state, too, for that matter. I don't want anybody thinking that I'm being elite. Because we are.
You're right. That's basically what I was saying to that idiot today on his program before he cut me off. That's exactly what I said. You know, essentially, after asking where to get some shine. Because they have become irrelevant. And you know, they are, well, let me put it this way. Their support system is non-existent in many cases. I mean, when you hear Donald Trump get on the air or tweet or whatever he was doing, what was he calling for, a march on Washington?
Yeah. A violent revolution.
Well, I can tell you what they need to do with people who say that sort of thing. I think he needs to be wearing a green smock with a pair of flip-flops. Because that's just totally and completely against any type of federal law that supports the Constitution. I mean, we saw last night our Constitution basically work. And this man was returned.
I think there's something else we can delve into a little bit, Jim, and that is this. We saw the negative effects of Citizens United. And I guess there's a beauty in this that I don't know if the plutocrats and the mega uber sickening rich of this country understand it, but if you try hard enough to buy an election and the other side is able to get the message out that that's what you're doing, people will respond negatively to it.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard for at least since 2010 that, well, the young people who voted for Barack Obama they're disenchanted now. More young people voted yesterday, Jim, than voted in 2008.
I know. And they were trying to say that all the youth in this country was totally disaffected and disconnected. And in so doing, cast forth many nets in which they ensnared that which for them and their cause was most unprofitable. That's for damn sure.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing is, it turns out so much of that stuff that the right wing was pumping out, it's not like they were, somebody else was saying, they were just making crap up, Jim, and expecting the rest of America to fall for it. Now, there are places where people will fall for it, but even so, And I guess maybe it's a little bit lost, or maybe I'm overvaluing it, but when there's a 100,000 vote difference between Barack Obama and Willard Romney in a state like Mississippi, Stan, that's important. That means that some generational change is about to seriously happen in that state.
Yeah, time marches on. And in their case, right over their face and their cause. I mean, they are no longer really relevant, and their lies are no longer believable. And people aren't that stupid that they're going to believe some of this crap that they've been putting out.
And the funny thing is, if you look at the breakouts, almost anywhere that's a population center went Democrat.
Yeah, they did. Absolutely. All of your urban areas did. Most of them did. Surely. Absolutely.
I mean, from all those red states, all the way from the Canadian border to the Gulf of Mexico, there were not, what it boils down to is there were not enough human beings to counteract the effects of Boston and New York and Philadelphia and Chicago and Milwaukee and Minneapolis. And even if you look at the demographic map inside the so-called red states, It turns out that red state business is a bunch of baloney. Because you know what? Atlanta is blue, 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 blue.
Of course it is.
So's Nashville. So's Birmingham.
I've heard from some of those people, one of them today, saying, I just cannot believe all that red and so little blue. And I thought to myself, and I told them, I said, well, I said, you know, that red doesn't represent voters necessarily and people.
That just represents the Electoral College.
Yeah. And also, in these states that aren't that heavily populated, I mean, what do you want to have vote? Leaves of grass or whatever? We're talking about people. And I said, we're talking about the people in the blue states outweigh the numbers in the, in the red state. As far as population. Do you know what the total totals were, the final totals were by...
It was like 59 million to 57 million, I think.
59, 57. Well, that's a good... That's a good margin for the president. And I certainly hope that he's going to use the next 4 years to continue his policies and to strengthen areas in which he was found weak and wanting. And I hope that there's going to be some type of, well, maybe after the next congressional election. Of course, I don't know. Some of them may have taken a lesson from this. I'm just being hopeful here and trying to be optimistic. But I hope that the gridlock will begin to, break. And I'm hoping that they will see, we can't afford this anymore.
But remember, the House is still in the hands of Boehner and Cantor. And frankly, I don't think Boehner can control Cantor.
No.
And I'll be honest, the one thing I would like to see in the Senate of the United States, and I doubt if we'll get it, Jim, you probably know where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I want a new majority leader.
Yeah, that would be acceptable. And not only acceptable, useful. And not only useful, necessary.
I want to make sure, and I think this is good enough reason to do it, I want to make sure that if we do get some good Supreme Court nominees, that there is not a whisper, not an issue whatsoever about putting them on the court.
Oh, absolutely.
But again... I think it's also fair, Jim, that we issue a bit of a reminder and an admonition. I don't think the Horn family needs it so much as we need to just whisper it into the ear of the universe. Barack Obama is still not a liberal.
Well, he probably never will be.
He never was.
And never will be. He's a centrist, basically.
He's not even an FDR Democrat. He's an Eisenhower Democrat.
Well.
You know, these people on the right, they will not go gracefully. And all I heard today, time after time after time, was, well, he's going to have to meet us. We're going to have to talk about entitlement reforms all day long, Jim. But never did I hear we need to talk about Pentagon reform.
Well,
we could, and I still maintain we could shake out the sofas in the Pentagon and probably come up with enough money to. Waste, fraud, and abuse, it would be enough money to finance universal single-payer health care in this country.
Well, that's definitely a possibility because there's a lot of money floating around across Potomac, that's for sure, and a lot of projects that there are being funded with that, money that they don't even want.
Yeah. Well, the second debate? Where Willard started talking about a Navy that the Navy doesn't even want?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what do they want? Dreadnoughts again? Do they want...
I don't understand.
I mean, we have a weapons inventory that's quite effective. Now, you're going to disagree with me on this, but as far as the use of drones and UAVs are concerned, the unmanned vehicles, okay? That's the wave of the future. That's the way wars are going to be fought on the integrated battlefield.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
And it does save pilots, and it's a more efficient way of surveillance and, interdiction. And whatever needs to be done. If there is a situation, they're efficient and they save on manpower. And I can appreciate that, having been from that, been in that background and worked there myself and worked with people. I mean, I have an understanding of these things, that maybe a lot of these people who are listening to me do not. But, you know, there are weapon systems there that are designed to be more efficient, and I know you're going to hate this word, more surgical.
No, again, I don't necessarily hate that word. If the Pentagon were smart, and I think there are some smart people there.
There's some very smart people there, let me tell you.
The constant knock has been that militaries constantly prepare to fight the last war.
Mm-mm.
Consequently, you know, the Cold War strategy was based upon the manner in which we fought the Second World War. The insurgencies that we dealt with in Vietnam, we were dealing with it with a military that was prepared to fight, you know, great big land battles against other militaries.
Yeah, but it didn't work because they run into Southeast Asia, where they had these people who've been fighting there for centuries and who had networks of tunnels and things like that that were underneath American bases. And, you know, basically it was a shoot and scoot type thing.
And we didn't learn in Iraq. We went in there and we won the Army versus Army war, but didn't have any inkling that, I mean, you remember Rumsfeld saying we'd be greeted as liberators and be able to bill Iraq for the cost of the war?
Yeah.
Well, that was because they were planning on fighting, you know, a ground war with Clausewitz tactics.
Well, what they didn't anticipate, in my opinion, was the backlash of the insurgents and the use of these individual design devices and things of that nature. I mean, when you can't see a battle line and when there are no fixed battle lines and stuff like that, you have to resort to the most difficult type of war there is, and that is fighting insurgency. I mean, you know, we even have lessons from the Napoleonic Wars when they invaded Spain.
Yeah.
I mean, the Spanish gave the French absolute hell and would be their ultimate denouement. I mean, they couldn't, the Spanish were fighting using guerrilla tactics. Where do you think the term guerrilla comes from?
Yeah.
Little warrior. So basically, we'll have to wait and see. I wish for the best, and I certainly have the people who are in uniform in my heart and mind, as I have always had, because I know they have to go out and hew the wood and chop, and draw the water. That's for sure. But we don't need to be using assets like that.
No, you don't need to put a division on the ground to get 13 people in a cell in Yemen. I get that.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. And if the use of unmanned aerial vehicles or drones or whatever you want to call them can help save lives and help save lives.
And that is the philosophical debate. Does it? Or is there a life-saving strategy that's not being considered, to wit the ancient maxim that we mind our own business?
Well, Bob, that's just not possible in the world in which we live. I mean, nations are so conflicted and they are so crowded against one another, and I'm afraid that we will never, as I said last night, using the phrase, in that area, cross into Jordan. I don't think we will. Now, there are people out there who say we will and we can, but it's just contrary to human nature, unfortunately. It's just a fault in the...
Well, it depends on your view of human nature. It depends on your view of the capability of culture and species to evolve?
Well, I would certainly like to see these assets being used for positive things, for disease research, for the improvement of...
And that's the point. The Pentagon budget, Jim, is so huge. You know, what is it? The Pentagon budget is larger than the next 10 defense budgets combined, if not 15 or 20. We've got a nuclear arsenal that could destroy life on this planet 100 times over, if not 1,000.
Oh, Bob, one submarine could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
So the question is, at what point does national defense become national... What, you know, where's that crossover line where national defense becomes national paranoia?
Well, you know, a lot of that comes from not necessarily the Pentagon itself, but from the lobbyists.
Right, and the Congress, who have big money donors who want to see the anti-submarine blimp built in Wilmington, Delaware.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the manufacturers. I mean, this is big business for these companies that supply, that are arms dealers and arms.
Well, do you remember what was it called? The Crusader siege gun?
Oh yeah.
Now that's something that was still under consideration in the early parts of the first decade of this century. A siege gun.
Well,
a siege gun, Jim. And the Army didn't want it, and the general DOD didn't want it, but there was a congressman somewhere, or three.
Had a district that made those guns.
That were going to make the Crusader siege gun, and by God, we need a siege gun.
I mean, that's the reason that South Carolina, for example, I'm surprised it's still above sea level, because of all the stuff that was put back in there by, I remember a guy named Lucius Mendel Rivers, and you know, they found that in the South that there would be a place for these companies, and they argued to have them put there, and that's the reason that, you know, that I thought South Carolina at one time was going to sink below sea level because of all the weight of the military there. And of course, it was good for the people who lived there because it provided jobs. It provided.
And so all of these things are integrated. We need to find a way for people to have meaningful employment that doesn't involve making stuff to blow other people up, or making utterly useless stuff, as it were.
Well, I certainly agree with you on the peaceful aspects of it.
I mean, the Navy has a ship out there under development, and every branch has been bedeviled with one machine or another like this. You had the Marines and that god-awful Osprey aircraft that kept killing test pilots and all the Marines that would have to get in it to see if it could ferry Marines. It was a neat design. It was part airplane, part helicopter, and the rotors would rotate, and then it would fall out of the sky. The Navy has a thing. It's this really, really fast attack craft. It's called a littoral craft that's supposed to operate in shallow waters. And the congressman who was in favor of it said, yeah, but it scares the hell out of them because it looks like Darth Vader. But you can damn well sink the thing with a .22 rifle.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of weapons in our nomenclature that aren't...
Meanwhile, really we still have the problem in the American military, Jim, of inadequate support for wounded personnel and inadequate support for active duty personnel. We still have, you know, E-1s and E-2s and E-3s who are out there getting food stamps.
Yes,
that hasn't gone away.
And that is absolutely unforgivable.
And in the day when you do have to fight a war for your very, you know, an existential war, not a war of choice like Iraq, in the day when you have to fight one of those, you have to have boots on the ground, and you have to be able to feed them. And in the last two decades, last decade really, we've developed this theory, you know, like Sandra and I were talking about last night, you know, the same people that gave us private prisons, it gave us the private corporate voting industry. Well, you know what? This is also the same school of thought that gave us the $29 Halliburger.
Oh, yeah, no. Halliburton and Blackwater and all those people that were over there and the types of what they charge for a bundle of laundry. And
you know, whatever happened to the Army doing its laundry? Whatever happened to the Army feeding its personnel?
Well, I don't know.
Well, they
outsource it to a private contractor, and that's where all the big money is. That's what I'm saying. The Pentagon is being fed. It's not being fed. The Pentagon is like, a goose is being prepared for pate. You nail its feet to the floor and stuff it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Clayton wrote in, Jim said, we have a military budget greater than all other countries combined.
Oh, yeah, that's been for a long time. But
So what I'm getting at by even bringing up the defense budget, Jim, is that these right wingers want to talk about whether I have to work until I'm 70 before I get Social Security and Medicare, or whether it's 67, 67 right now for me, because I'm not quite 50. I've already been screwed, and so has my entire generation. But everybody wants to look at what the schlemiels are getting out there. But we need a littoral boat that could be sunk with a 22 rifle round.
Well, you're going to always sign somebody who's going to develop some type of weapon that's going to entrance a few people at the top, and then, of course, that coupled with the driving forces in Congress and their districts that will benefit by the manufacture of the same to make these things a reality when they really have no real place in the nomenclature of our military's hardware or inventory, excuse me. But, I mean, that's just the way things are. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. I really don't think so. But I wish we could develop things that were more peaceful in nature and in design and in scope that would ameliorate the horror and the problems of our planet instead of exacerbate them. That's how I feel personally. And, I've had to work in an atmosphere like that in which if I expressed that type of opinion, I would definitely not be very popular.
Oh, no.
And you can understand that.
No. There's an orthodoxy that accompanies all of that. And it's the kind of orthodoxy you would expect to find in what you have referred to as a forbidden city.
Right. And, Bob, the military services are extremely parochial. Okay? I mean, they, each one wants to try to outdo the other, and that's a part of their spirit and their genetica and drive and that type of thing that, we're here to give you a ride and, first to go, last to know. And, that's a certain, esprit de corps within the military that perhaps is, and I respect it. I do. Please, I do. But I think it's being misused.
Oh, I don't think there's any way of getting around that, and I don't think anybody would disagree with you, Jim.
But anyway, I've enjoyed the program tonight. I enjoyed last night. Last night was a load of fun. I'd like to hear.
I'll have to have some conversations with the Skype chat room. And I've broached the topic once before, but I think maybe we should work out a way to integrate that into Friday on the Front Porch.
I think it'd be a good thing, Bob. It will certainly innervate, and it would prevent you from having to do a filibuster and stuff like that when you don't really feel like it, or.
Oh, I'm always up for a filibuster, Jim. You know that.
I know. But I mean, two heads or three heads are better than one, and I think it's a good idea to grow.
Well, I didn't. I had to tinker with the equipment here a little bit last night in between.
I don't know how it worked because, I thought you were on Skype and I was on a landline.
So. Well, you are. Well, I mean, I was here. There were a dozen people on Skype. You were on a landline. Albert was on a landline. When Kevin came on later, he was on a landline. And, but the audio processing of the tired old computer here held up for the most part, I thought, pretty well.
God, and you're still running Windows XP?
Oh, yeah. And I'm not, one, I can't afford to change. Two, when I change, it'll be to Windows 8. I've had good reports on 8 from John Fox. And when I do that, I'll just do a complete rebuild of the computer. And God almighty, I dread it. I mean, the data that's on this thing is just horrifying to contemplate. And whatever I do, I will somehow or another screw up and lose data.
Well, don't you have a consultant, that guy, what was his name, Peter Godbold in Florida, who helped you at one
time? Oh, yeah, yeah, and he taught me how to do it. It's just that there's all kinds of, but this is the fourth generation of the production computer here, and so all of that data is tucked away in weird-ass little corners and stuff, and it really doesn't, it's just a matter of, and the thing's probably got, you know, 8 tons of malware in it. So, yeah, it's just, that's why.
I wish you liking that, because that's going to be a very daunting task.
Oh, yeah, and when I rebuild this thing, it'll be rebuilt with an Intel Core i7 and some sort of monster video card and enough RAM to choke a goose and, yeah.
Well, that's what you need. You know, we had conversations last week about security things and this and the other, and I already have the first thing you told me about, the Windows, what's it called?
Security Essentials.
Yeah, and when I tried the malware, the two are incompatible.
Malware bytes will usually run with Windows Security Essentials. I'm not sure what's going on there.
I don't know, but because malware is put out by, is it Norton?
No, malware bytes is just malware.
Well, apparently the malware that I found.
No, this is a different program. I'll get with you and I'll send you a link to this place. Lottie in the chat room put me onto it, and it is a brilliant little piece of keep it clean software.
Okay, well, listen, I appreciate that, and I hope you have a good night, and I hope you haven't gotten too tired from last night's adventure.
Oh, I'll be back up and running. But I don't know, I'm getting older or something, and I don't do 4 o'clock in the morning so well anymore.
You want to tell me about it?
Jim, have a good evening.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from not too far from here. Andy writing in with some comments on my conversation with Jim. He said, this is where the Democratic Party ought to smarten up. Mississippi Democratic-Republican vote spread and get Governor Howard Dean back in the party structure to implement the 50-state strategy. It's time. Obama's Chicago boys wake up and throw out these Rahm Emanuel DLC third-way acolytes. The Republicans answer to the plutocrats, the Koch brothers, so forget about any compromise except from the Democrats. That's always the problem. Everybody says compromise, compromise, and compromise is frequently defined as when the Democrats capitulate. Now, Andy says, forget about any compromise except from the Democrats, meaning I'd rather see gridlock. Please, Mr. Obama, don't compromise. Mr. Obama is a neoliberal corporatist. And when that is how you've been trained to be, it's how you're going to be. A couple of times lately on the program, I've mentioned that acronym that was created by Margaret Thatcher, POS, TINA, there is no alternative. There is an entire generation of really smart people who went to really good schools who have been suckled from the cradle upward on the idea that there is no alternative save for so-called globalization. And when you are taught that there is no alternative, you will behave as if there is no alternative. There are an abundance of alternatives. But globalization is what this bunch wanted, so they created this idea that that was the only way to get from point A to point B. You know, when a little lion cub gets off the breast and begins to go out and grow into a larger lion, it is going to be a predatory animal that eats slow gazelles. It's not going to be a vegan lion, because it has only been taught how to be a predator. Well, that's the case with the generation of smart people we're dealing with now. But yeah, to get Howard Dean on the line and say, let's talk about this 50-state strategy again. I'm tired of seeing all these. I'm tired of the rise of the Confederacy. Let's go whip them without guns. Yeah. Jan wrote in a little bit ago under the heading of the election. She said, during times of war, these hate mongers should have to pay the piper. Treason charges. Trump, Limbaugh, Beck, Rove, all of their ilk. And let me add one more to that, just for your listening pleasure. You knew, didn't you? You just knew that the Nuge, I mentioned Meatloaf earlier, so this kind of begged mention. You knew the Nuge was not going to sit silently by as freedom died. Now remember, this is Ted Nugent, who was so petrified of going and serving his country in Vietnam that he did not change his clothes for 2 weeks and did not bother going to the bathroom anywhere except his pants, so that when he walked into the draft board, he was entirely encrusted in dried urine and feces. That's the Nuge. But as long as it's somebody else's skin in the game, he's a real patriot. Tweets from last night. I cry tears of blood for the last best place and the warriors who died for this tragedy. Good luck, America. You just voted for economic and spiritual suicide, soulless fools. What subhuman varmint, but that subhuman varmint means that he feels free to shoot them on sight. What subhuman varmint believes others must pay for their obesity, booze, cell phones, birth control, abortions, and lives? So Obama still demands the hardest workers provide for the non-workers. Shared opportunities, my ass. Pimps, whores, and welfare brats and their soulless supporters have a president to destroy America. I try not to do this very often. Actually, I try to mostly use language that could be used on terrestrial censored FCC radio. But this isn't terrestrial censored FCC radio, and I'm guessing if you've been listening along, you know by now that I'm getting ready to say something. Little Timmy, little Cindy, are you out of the room? Good. Fuck you, Nuge. That was just coming. It just had to happen. Marty wants to know, does this mean that I have to give up my damn Yankees CD? I don't know. Where does Tommy Shaw fall on this political spectrum, Marty? Irish Dave says, oh no, Fluffy, it's a blast from the past. Bob, when I was in BCT in the summer of 67 at Fort Lewis, Washington, there were 6 trainees from South Carolina. I asked one how they got into the National Guard and why they were in basic so far from Fort Jackson, South Carolina. So he told me that he was running out of student deferment as a Gamecock. He just called his Uncle Mendel. And then I said, Rivers, why are there 6 of you? And he said something about just one magic opening in the National Guard would be like, you know, suspect. Irish Dave. Based on Jim's reference. Jim says, go, Andy. 50-state elimination of Chi-Town ward politics. Bring Howard Dean back. You know, we might be able to get something done if we could hang on to the Senate and get the House of Representatives in 2014. Might be able to get a lot done. And from Philip, this evening's Moment with Philip. My youngest daughter's telephoned me today to ask how she should have responded to the racism she encountered last night at college. Now, we do not know which college, so consequently, we won't make any pre-value judgments. Apparently, while walking across campus with friends, several people remarked that we again had a N-word president. Only they used the word. She told him to back off and leave her alone, but was deeply upset. Her boyfriend here at home is African-American, and she had already encountered shock and surprise at that fact from her college soccer teammates. I reminded her that she was attending school on Maryland's Eastern Shore, which is the nearest equivalent to Texas that I've found here. Flat and populated by many folks who think Larry the Cable Guy is high art, the Eastern Shore was the site of Klan activity and riots when I was her age. I also informed her about your remark that the president needed more Secret Service protection. More importantly, I told her that Romney was the last gasp of the reactionary whites of this country, and his campaign was based on fear, racism, and fear. Tracy articulated it so well last night. I also told her about the president's remarks regarding progress that comes in fits and starts. I said, you can't change them, and there's no point in trying to speak with them. They're afraid and deeply fearful that those who have been historically and currently oppressed might oppress them in the same way now that we are becoming a country in which European Americans are becoming a minority. I might editorialize again, the minority we started out being. They're losing their privilege slowly but surely. I informed her that when I was a child, the only African Americans on television were athletes and entertainers, and Latinos and blacks were invisible in that television world. The generation of women before her mother's generation could not get credit in their own names and were largely relegated to being nurses and teachers in the workplace. I found myself articulating the optimism of Brother Albert as I told her that progress is occurring, albeit slowly, but this is a different world than when I was 4 years younger than she is now. Dr. King and Robert Kennedy were assassinated in the same year, and my state was the only state that voted against the insanity of the Vietnam War, in which her cousin was killed after the country discovered that there was no secret plan to end the war, and shock of shocks, Nixon was a pathological liar. What really dismayed her is that folks assumed because of her color that she was in the club, so to speak. That she would laugh at the joke about what one calls the first black president. But the reality is that the most powerful man politically in this country is black, and the bigots she encountered can't alter that. Moreover, their children will no longer be able to divide the world into white and non-white. So much for the brief elation about Romney's loss. But we will have marriage equality in Maryland despite the best efforts of the Catholic and evangelical churches. Medical marijuana is now legal in our home state, and here in Maryland, children of undocumented immigrants who have grown up in this country will now receive in-state tuition rates when they attend college. I told my daughter that her generation had been instrumental in re-electing the president, and she should not despair. The reactionaries' time is over, and they know it. Things fall apart. The center will not hold. A terrible beauty is born, and we must remember that their days are numbered, but they are dangerous as they become more and more cornered. Unfortunately, despite my words, I could not help her recapture the excitement of having voted for the candidate who won. The bastards dashed that, and today my wife's Christian shift manager informed her that the Democrats had stolen the election because Romney lost Florida, Virginia, and other allegedly Republican states. So it goes. We're living in the age of entitlement reform. Whites are losing their ill-conceived sense of entitlement to regard this as only their country and other people such as the president as unwelcome visitors, and it is a long time overdue. Lastly, as I wrote you last night, Harry Reid must go. We need Democratic unity in the Senate to ensure that the president fulfill his modest promises, and Reid is simply not the person to do it. It's time to head home to the grandchildren. Brothels and casinos of Nevada, Harry. Our party needs to govern to ensure that the other party doesn't continue to assume that it rules. Moreover, as we warn Iran ad nauseum about obtaining nuclear weapons, we might do well to remember that Saddam Hussein didn't have nuclear weaponry and was quickly unseated, while North Korea's supreme leader rattled the saber and issued threats and was left alone. To assume that the Iranian government is stupid and failed to realize that its theocracy might be next in the plan to restore the glory of empire and quench Bush's bloodthirst is nonsensical. Similarly, to fail to recognize the vacuum in that area created by Bush's obsession with Iraq that Iran so eagerly seeks to fill is idiocy. Policies have consequences. Sorry, says Philip. No barbs and quips tonight, Bob. My daughter's welcome to reality was too sobering. Yeah, Philip, I get it. And sometimes that sort of thing, well, if she'd been a little bit younger, you'd have gone down the street looking to see who made your baby cry. And you'd have gone looking with a vengeance. I get that. You know, it's conversations that we, like what we have here, that make it all worthwhile. Philip's observations about, and look, don't think for a minute that a moment like that, like what Philip's daughter was subjected to, don't think that that isn't an element of disenfranchisement in and of itself. You take the joy of victory and steal that if you can't steal the election, and maybe she won't vote next time because she knows that there's somebody out there to make sure she doesn't feel good about it. It is a form of assault. And it is not lost on me that a guy said it. We are not entering into some four-year phase of kumbaya and hugging. As history notes, second terms are seldom successful, seldom remarkable, and it will take heroic, monumental effort to make this one be any different. Get busy now. We need a national conversation, a national progressive conversation about how we go about getting into places like Alabamistan and Mississippi, about how we nurture real candidates in those jurisdictions who have the ability to inspire people to think beyond the ancient hatreds. Will we have that conversation? We don't really know, do we? We just don't know. You'd sure like to hope so, though, wouldn't you? It's about 21 minutes past the hour. There is still time in the conversation for some conversation radio if you want to jump in, or I'll just filibuster the next 39 minutes. The number is 304-658-3333, and you can reach on Skype via at Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. I misspoke earlier. I heard from our buddy Clayton when I mentioned that we were an hour into the program and no contributions had been received of the 150 we try to raise on any given evening. I misspoke, because Clayton had written in to say that there was $25 on the way, so we are at $125. Didn't really do a lot of fundraising last night, so that's where we stand as we try to hold even and try to keep this little experiment and conversation going. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, so I thought it might be fun to check in with the evangelical industry. Tony Perkins. Norman?
Yes, Mother.
I hosted Election 2012 Aftermath and Aftershocks for the Family Research Council. Thought you might enjoy hearing what this election looked like. Now, you won't enjoy it, but it's possible. The gloat fodder. Thought you might enjoy hearing what the freaks of the evangelical movement think of all of this.
On this issue, even though for the first time, voters may have voted to recognize the redefinition of marriage or same-sex marriage, you can make something legal, but you can't make it right. And what I mean by that, we are now...
You can make something legal, but you can't make it right. Well, Tony, Norman, Tony, why not follow that with, yeah? Jesus. The redefinition of marriage. Come on. Quit softening up on the language, Tony. Why don't you say, legalize sodomy? Because that's what you're thinking. Of course, you know, you're standing behind a desk, so we can't see that the very mention of sodomy gets you all excited, Tony. Redefinition of marriage. Yeah, it really sucked when we redefined it from a property transfer involving 32 goats, 12 camels, and a sheep. Redefinition of marriage.
We're approaching the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. 40 years after the Supreme Court said that it is lawful to end the life of an unborn child, it's still seen by over half.
Yeah, and let's remember, Tony Perkins prays every night, dear sweet baby Jeebus, please don't let abortion become illegal, because then I might have to get an honest job instead of just lying to people for a living.
Of Americans as morally wrong. And I see this issue of marriage the same way. The people can vote on it. For the first time we've seen that. Courts can rule on it. But I don't think you can violate natural law and force Americans to recognize it as morally right.
But if voters are saying that it is politically right and socially right and culturally right, then why don't you just scurry on back behind the baseboards where you live there, Tony, you freaking cockroach? None of anything that he says makes any sense.
Well, they can vote on it, but we still demand the right to command them how to live their lives because we talk to our invisible friend all the time and he talks back and he tells us we can do it.
I think the term for a lot of things over the next 4 years.
You know what's curious here is we've got a dialogue going on between two people who don't have uteri. Just saying.
It's going to be civil disobedience is going to come up quite a bit.
The heat is about to be turned up tighter. It's about to be turned up higher on American Christians. Those who are truly followers of God are about to experience a higher cost for serving Christ.
Oh, please. And people who are following God are going to pay a higher price for serving Christ. What are they paying at the collection plate now, Buster? What are you saying? The dues are going up? There aren't any fundamentalist evangelical gulags, and there aren't going to be any. In the second term, Barack Hussein Obama is not going to take away your ability to swig strychnine, roll on the floor, and speak in tongues, and cry over the little fetuses. You could, however, try something you've never tried in your entire life, and that is mind your own damn stinking business.
Jesus doesn't want us to mind...
Yeah, it's funny, whatever it is that we suggest you do... you say Jesus doesn't want you to do but see, there's nothing about abortion in your New Testament. There's nothing in Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Sorry, nothing. Nothing. Not a yet. Niente.
Pay a higher price for being a Christian.
No. As much as we'd like to, nobody's going to tax all those political filthy churches that sat there and pumped poison into the body politic for years. Even though I think the effective tax rate for all Americans would go down to about 3% if we just tax the stinking churches.
It's called persecution. It will come in varying form. But the fact is...
Okay, wait. Now, where's that? That's not fair. You can't be an evangelical and say, what? It's called persecution and it comes in varying forms. And then just move on to the next sentence.
It's called persecution. It will come in varying form. But the fact is, there's going to be increasing numbers of, up to this moment, silent pastors or silent followers of Jesus who are now going to recognize how wrong they have been in their silence. And they'll be emboldened by the Spirit of God, by the Spirit of truth. And our ranks are going to increase, and they're going to increase dramatically.
Gideon's army was just a small group of people that were well prepared, ready to go. And so
they were also mythological, but never mind. And they rode unicorns and played trumpets.
We can see time and time again throughout Scripture that sometimes the enemy looks formidable and like we can't win. And obviously we know that our God will not be mocked and our God reigns.
Our team will continue to stand, to defend, and to advance. Yes, you heard me correct. Advance. Faith, family, and freedom here in America.
Yeah, thanks to those fine folks at rightwingwatch.org for catching that. So, yeah, I hope you enjoyed celebrating last night's victory. Party's over. These rotten merchants of filth and hate and blood have an endless river of money pouring into their coffers, and they're not gonna stop. Which, if you can tolerate it, is actually a good thing, because the more they talk, the less relevant they become. Because, well, what was that tweet I saw from last night? Here's the bad news. Or here's how you know you're in trouble. A, the rape guy lost. And you ask B, which one? I said I wasn't going to subject you to it, but, well, I got to. Because there's more paranoia than meets the eye in any given moment with the Becker head. You know, we started off the program by noting that he began, the man of God that he is, by observing that sometimes God just sucks. What honest adherent of a religion would do that? What animist in a jungle would say, well, you know, sometimes the water sprites, they just suck. What kind of Wiccan would say, well, you know, sometimes the lady, she just sucks? I would dearly love to find the deeply ultra-Orthodox rabbi who says, well, you know, sometimes the nameless one, the Almighty, the Creator, sucks. You reckon Glenn will get a little note from Salt Lake City? Dear Brother Lemuel Beck, stop saying that Elohim sucks. But that wasn't all, and that's the reason I'm bringing it back up. There was crying involved. You can't miss this.
But it's suicide to sit back. And not just for my company or your company, but for the country. We don't have the luxury of time. I've been telling you for a while, and I've told my own staff, if the president wins, I don't know how we survive. I don't know how we survive the...
Don't, Glenn. There's lots of cheap $10 Pakistani steel razor blades for sale on eBay. Get one. This is not a world you want to live in, Glenn. Just say, just kidding. Satire, you know?
Regulation that is coming for my industry. I don't know how we're...
The regulation that's coming for your industry? You stupid piece of shit, you're on the internet like me. There's no regulation coming. That's why I can call you a stupid piece of shit. Regulation coming for your... Yeah, I know, they're going to round you off, and they're going to round you up, and they're going to send you off to the FEMA education camp, and you're going to be selling cigarettes under the shady, on the shady side of the camp under the guard tower. Right. Or, I don't know, trading them for... Well, I don't even want to contemplate that.
We're going to survive the pressure and the tactics, because he has more flexibility now, and they remember their enemies. I don't know how we're going to survive, because I won't compromise. I won't make a deal with the devil.
Who's the devil, Glenn? Wait, never mind.
I want you to understand this. Inflation is coming. The fiscal cliff is coming. The dollar fell last night on the news. Your taxes are going up. Your health care costs are going up. Your religion is going to come under attack. Gas, coal, and energy is going to become more expensive. Do you remember that list we put out a few months ago of do these things? I will tell you, last week we purchased more farmland as a family. May I recommend, if you have a chance to buy farmland, you buy farmland. If you live in the East...
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. How long before the next Glenn Beck show where he starts talking about... And there'll have to be a fife and drum corps in the background. Only people of a certain age will get this inside joke, but still... How long before he starts about the tent talking about the tender green shoots? Oh, who's going to be his Ebb?
Oliver! Glenn!
Can't wait to taste them hotcakes. I recommend you buy more farmland. What, with gold? Buy more farmland. Hell, I'd love to have some farmland, but any time you try to buy any land around here, some son of a bitch in coal company comes along and wants to blow it to the moon. Oh, wait, but you love coal. Piece of shit.
May I recommend, get the hell out of the East. Find a place where you are surrounded by like-minded people, and the best way to find those people is you should probably look at the maps on how counties voted. And get away as far as you can from where huge densities of people who are like, I just need FEMA to help me.
Yeah. He has a massive spread in Connecticut. You reckon he got any FEMA help? Wonder who got his electric back on so quick. Oh, Glennie, I want you to move to Mississippi, Stan. I really do. I do. I want you to move to Mississippi. There's not a lot of population density, not that much population density along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Let's say you move to Past Christiane, Glennie. Probably find some farmland down there. Of course, it periodically winds up underwater, but don't worry. We won't send FEMA for your ass at the next hurricane. We'll let you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and have the rising tide lift your godforsaken boat, Glennie.
Get your kids away from the school that is indoctrinating them that socialism is okay.
You know, because we've had kids in the public schools, and every day, day after day, I mean, yeah, my granddaughter, the eldest of my grandchildren, just started in the public schools, and she called me after the first day of school, and she said, "Opa, what's socialism? Tell me about how the wheels of industry are oiled by the blood of the workers." She did that in kindergarten. Every day! I'll never forget the day that she called and sang the Internationale for us for the first time. It was a moving moment. Or was that the ABC song? I forget.
May I highly suggest you get grandfathered in to the Second Amendment today. Oh, and don't forget the ammunition.
Yeah, don't forget the ammunition. God, I love rightwingwatch.org. Get grandfathered in. Yeah, get away from those urban centers. You know why he said urban, right? It's not like he's a Latin scholar who understands that urbs is, U-R-B-S, is a Latin noun meaning city. Urban centers means get away from the dark-skinned people. I'm telling you, Glenn, Mississippi, it's gonna be big. Big, 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 big. And then just because sometimes reruns are fun. We've talked about it some. But you can't enjoy it enough. The Fox News meltdown. How could we not?
So what's your sense of the evening? I mean, you look at these exit polls, you look at the, you know, what
are we... My sense of the evening is, if Mitt Romney loses in Ohio, the president is reelected.
How do you think we got to that?
Now, that took some brains, didn't it, folks? You can't be a Republican president and lose Ohio, so if Mitt Romney loses Ohio, well, the president's reelected. Millions of dollars a year for that kind of intellect. Wow.
Point. I mean, President Obama's approval rating was so low, and obviously this is hypothetical. We don't know who's even winning right now, never mind who won.
Now, this is Megyn Kelly before she got the news and she got that stricken Eva Braun look on her face.
But how do you think it got this tight?
Because it's a changing country. The demographics are changing. It's not a traditional America anymore.
Traditional. More code. More code. Traditional means white and white controlled.
And there are 50% of the voting public who want stuff. They want things.
They want things. Now, I don't know when that changed. I don't know what part or time in America that people were utterly selfless and immaterialist. I mean, didn't the Minutemen, of whom Billow is so fond, didn't they want a real good rifle and good powder and a good shot and some patches and oil and didn't they want a nice little cabin to keep warm in the frozen Massachusetts winter? No, it's changed. Now people want things. That's more code. I don't have to translate, do I?
And who is going to give them things? President Obama. He knows it, and he ran on it.
Give them things? Give them things? Them. Come on, say it, Bill. Say black people. Gonna give the black people. Say Obama phone, O'Reilly. Say it. I feel like I'm at a screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Fills me with anticipation. Say it, patient.
And whereby 20 years ago, President Obama would have been roundly defeated by an establishment candidate like Mitt Romney.
Really?
The white establishment is now the minority. And
when you say the white establishment is now the minority, doesn't that mean you don't get to call it the establishment anymore?
Voters, many of them, feel that this economic system is stacked against them, and they want stuff. You're going to see a tremendous Hispanic vote for President Obama, overwhelming black vote for President Obama, and women will probably break President Obama's way. People feel that they are entitled to things, and which candidate between the two?
Because, you know, white people are so immaterial. Just out there spinning their own fabric like Gandhi. Walking everywhere they go. Those selfless, immaterial white people who never built an economic system that was geared especially and entirely and exclusively for themselves. Not immaterial. They're like little ascetic monks, all those white people who don't want things.
Just going to give them things.
Bill, will you stick around?
I just got an email from a top Romney person. I said, do you agree with our call? He said, not really. It is less than 20,000 votes now.
Now, this is Chris Wallace after the call for re-election.
With 20% of the vote still out in GOP areas, Carl was just on the phone with somebody else, and you got some more recent figures.
Here it is. The secretary is the...
This is precious. This is the beginning of the Rove meltdown.
Paul, he said, not really. It is less than 20,000 votes now with 20% of the vote still out in GOP areas. Carl was just on the phone with somebody else, and you got some more recent figures.
Here it is. The secretary of the networks, our network called on the basis of about 74% of the vote being in. The Secretary of State website has 77.49% of the vote in, and it shows 2,229,686 votes for President Obama with 49.19% of the vote, and for Governor Romney, 2,228,695, a 911 vote difference, 49.17.
And you say it's a 900 Obama is leading 900 votes.
When it was at 74%, it was 20 some odd thousand votes. Now, with 77% of the vote in, it is 991. One of the reasons why is one of the biggest blocks of votes out in the state are the Republican suburbs inside Hamilton County. And as they started to come in, they narrowed that margin dramatically. Like the Speaker pro tem of the House, his district had 3% of the vote in until very recent. Now it started to come.
I'm going to ask you a straight-out question. You went through this in 2000. You almost went through it in 2004. Do you believe that Ohio has been settled?
No, I don't. And look, if we are calling this on the basis of 74% of the vote being in, and when 77% is in, Secretary of State website, I got the director of the Ohio campaign for Romney on the other end of the line refreshing the page every few seconds, and this went from being, when we started this conversation 3 or 4 minutes ago, 1,995 vote margin for President Obama to just now 999.
And the outstanding 20% of the vote.
Now, there's a potential song parody in here somewhere called I Fought the Math and the Math Won.
Oh, where is that?
Well, we know that some of it is in Cuyahoga County, which is going to be Democrat, but we've got a half of Hamilton County out. We had the city of Cincinnati vote. We now saw... We are starting to see the suburbs start coming in. Then we have big swatches of Butler County, Delaware County, and Warren County, all of which are Republican counties that have big chunks of their vote out.
So you're not saying that Obama isn't going to win,
no,
but you're just saying he hasn't won it yet.
I think this is premature. We got a quarter of the vote. Now remember, here's the thing about Ohio. A third of the vote or more is cast early. That is won overwhelmingly by the Democrats. It's counted first, and then you count the election day. And the question is, by the time you finish counting the election day, does it overcome that early advantage that the Democrats have built up in early voting, particularly in Cuyahoga County?
Now, Joe, I we know that Carl has a rooting interest. I think at this point, he's just telling us
what it takes to get there. Megan, I will escort you down the steps here.
Now, this is where we got the first shot of Megyn Kelly with her Eva Braun walking down the hallway bit. Brett Baer, so caring, so solicitous, concerned for her well-being.
At this point, he's just telling us
what it takes to get there. Megan, I will escort you down the steps here so you can go interview them.
All right.
Watch your step.
Thank you. I don't want to fall.
There you go.
In front of all these millions of people.
Okay. Megan is going to go to the decision desk and interview them about the decision on Ohio.
Try to get to the bottom of this.
Now, this is a walking
right
shot.
Out the door. They used to keep them right here with us. In the studio, and then for some reason, they moved them down the hall. We were too close. We were thinking this wouldn't be necessary, but as it turns out. So you can see this is sort of all the folks behind the scenes who have been watching the program from back here. Hi, guys. Arthur Idala decided to join. They're way down the hall. So we'll do a little interrogation and see if they stand by their call, notwithstanding the doubts.
This is all a walking shot. Now there's a long walking shot.
Keep coming. Here we go. Now, when we practiced this before, there's the beautiful Jenna Lee. When we practiced this before in our rehearsals, we lost all audio in our ears right about here. That's happening again. But
Can you hear me, Megan?
In any event, we'll try to get to the bottom of it. Now, here are the guys. This is the decision desk. Now we're in the heart of the decision desk room. Arnon,
yes.
You head this place up. Chris Steyerwald, you've been doing all the number crunching. These guys behind, you tell me whether you stand by your call in Ohio, given the doubts Karl Rove just raised.
We're actually quite comfortable with the call in Ohio. Basically, right now, there's too much Obama vote that's outstanding there that we know is going to come in.
Too much Obama vote. Too much. Yeah. Too much Obama vote. We stand by our call is another way of saying, we weren't responsible for hiring Carl, but that dude's a mess. You need to get him off camera real quick before he starts screaming and making animal noises. But all those long shots of Megyn Kelly walking. It was like a Progressive Insurance ad with Flo, and we're walking. Jan asking, is Glenn Beck moving to Farmville? No, but the funny thing is, in a piece at nymag.com, Gabriel Sherman apparently talked to an unnamed insider at Fox who said the following. This is Fox News. So anytime there's a chance to show off Megyn Kelly's legs, they'll go for it. You know, it was Megyn Kelly's legs were a way of trying to keep the Radio Rwanda demographic from simply going in and ending it all. Oh my God. Bob writes in from Winston-Salem under the subject line, Mixed Feelings. Today I'm torn between elation and a feeling of impending doom. Of course, I'm thrilled that the side of light did so well on the national front with President Obama returning, an increase in Democratic senators, and a small uptick in Democratic House members. Hooray for Alan Grayson and Tammy Duckworth. But here in the 5th District of North Carolina, we easily returned... Oh, my God. Wait, Bob. Don't feel bad. Here in the 5th District of North Carolina, we easily returned Virginia Fox to the House. But that's okay. Because if you want public faces of the GOP, honest to God, you really do want them to be Michelle Bachmann. You really do want them to be Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee. You really do want them to be Steve King. And yes, you want it to be double X Virginia Fox. Bob continues, made sure of all our local county commissioners are right-wing and elected Pat McCrory as the first Republican North Carolina governor in over 20 years. That, in combination with the Republican legislature, means all the right-wing crazy bills our current governor vetoed will now breeze right through. And how delighted I was to see the new gov-elect on the Daily Rundown with Chuckles Todd today. Chuckles. Hanging on to that one. Telling us the... Did Albert call him the man baby last night? Man baby Chuckles Todd. Telling us how he's already consulted with Scott Walker for his unique take on how to hit the ground running. So I'm open to any suggestions about how I can keep my spirits up as North Carolina devolves into Mississippi. Thanks, Bob, and I'll be sending in my November tithe in a bit. Thanks, Bob. It's confusing when Bob thanks Bob and Bob thanks Bob, but thanks, Bob. Chuckles Todd. Man, baby. How to keep your spirits up? It's North Carolina. Y'all got a long history of running moonshine. I would not only keep my spirits up, I'd stock up my spirits. I kid. No, I don't. Sometimes you need a snort. Get active. Be active. Find your nearest progressive group and grow their number by one. Stay aware, stay alert, and don't be afraid to talk to people about what's being done. Because, see, North Carolinians are kind of proud. They're proud of not being Alabama and Mississippi. They're proud of not being being South Carolina, for that matter. They're proud of the barbecue out in the western end of the state. They've got some beautiful little cultural towns going on, places like Boone and Asheville. Special. Very special. So just hang in, Bob. Just hang in best you can. Was Megyn Kelly scissoring down the stairs, asks Jim. Now stop that. I feel like Jack Benny. Let's go to the phones in these remaining moments. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward in Dallas.
Hey, Edward.
Guess what? Dallas County is blue.
Yes, it is.
It is blue. And that just amazes me because we have the biggest Southern Baptist church in the world down in downtown Dallas.
They right, that ranch.
That ranch down there, damn right.
But it is blue, and that's the thing that all these demographers and their right-wingers who paint states red. No, I don't think people should get away with that anymore.
Well, the only other blue were, I think, Harris County, where Houston is, and all the counties along the Rio Grande between Texas and Mexico. They were all blue. And I'm so happy. Oh, and by the way, about the moonshine,
mm-hmm.
Well... I used to love to bring friends from Kansas down to North Carolina to visit, and this friend said to my uncle, Mr. Early, I've heard about the North Carolina moonshine. Do you know if that you can get any of that anymore? And my uncle said, oh, son, I don't know. It's awful hard to come by. He walked downtown, and 10 minutes he was back with a mason jar full of it.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, let me tell you, that panther piss would absolutely knock you for a loop.
Oh, I have empirical evidence to suggest that what you speak is true.
It's true. I swear it. Well, I'm so glad that Dallas County turned blue.
And you have a right to be, because this is a changing nation, and there is reason for hope in this change. Because everybody's, you know, these right-wingers, Edward, poor old Bill O'Reilly there, I don't know, I thought he was going to strangle himself with his own necktie or something. But, you know, the white privilege establishment hasn't really gotten all that much right lately, have they?
No, not anymore. And I'm retired now, but I used to run a small business here in Dallas, and I had lots of Latinos and working for me, and I never found that they were lazy and shiftless and all this stuff that these right-wingers say they are. That's not true. It's a lie.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They were great, and I loved every one of them. Well, anyway, oh, by the way, Billy Graham is a member of the First Baptist Church here in Dallas.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could tell you some stories about them, but I can't on the air.
Well, maybe we'll save it for a show where nobody's listening, because I want to hear those stories.
I'd probably get sued. You take care.
All right. You too, Edward.
I'm rejoicing in the victory.
Hear, hear. Bye now.
Bye.
And that's our buddy Edward in Blue Dallas. Email coming in from our good friend Robert in Japan. He says, I'm enjoying a perfect morning here in Japan. Now, a few thoughts about this election. A week ago, the wife of Romney made a statement that if her husband lost the election, that he would not try again. Once she said that, within a microsecond, I said aloud, liar! What this has taught the Mormon Church is that they came close to taking over the U.S. and turning back the clock and allowing that old habit of polygamy. 2016 is just around the corner for these people. Trust me, They are now campaigning and planning 16 hours a day, tens of thousands of them. They have nothing to lose and everything to gain. Yeah, well, you know, when one white horse pulls up lame, all you got to do is peroxide another one and, oh, look, another white horse. So we find ourselves pretty much at the close of the program. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you very, very much. Thank you for your kind contributions that keep the lights on, the packets passing, the electrons doing what electrons do. Thank you. Hopefully in the next 21 hours or so, we'll see another $125 come in to cover tonight's show. Thank you very, very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Sparky, the moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for the blog post. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. 10 years now saving progressive liberal radio on the Internet and has never, ever, ever sent a bill. Thanks, of course, go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org, ACHEACT.org. Go to ACACT.org and learn how you can be a part of creating a meaningful future in Appalachia by ending mountaintop removal. ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Cutie, it's all for you. Here comes my buddy Rick Smith on the horn.